Welcome into Texans on Tap. I'm Brandon Strange alongside Charlie Pulillo and Josh Jordan. You can follow them on X at Pulillo and at Josh Jordan SCS. Charlie, Josh, welcome. And gents, if I can just briefly give a tiny peek to everyone behind the curtain on the show. Everybody knows that the NFL offseason has its dead spots, and that's challenging for us as content creators because we got to find stuff to talk about. And we don't like putting out episodes where we're not interested in what we're talking about because we actually want people to care about what we're saying and not be bored out of our minds. So after last week's whirlwind of moves, we were starting to look ahead and go, boy, like, what if the moves are over with for Houston? Like, what are we going to be talking about in the next couple of weeks? But for the second week in a row, we're doing the show a day early because Nick Caserio is out here making moves. And his latest is probably one of the most exciting because this is exactly what the doctor ordered. Three-time Pro Bowler guard Wyatt Teller from the Browns comes to Houston on a two-year, $16 million deal, potentially worth a $23 million deal. Like, the microscope was on Nick Caserio about this O-line, regardless of whatever the what me worry stance that he took with the media. But he has spent almost $90 million, around $90 million, maybe a little over, depending on how these contracts work out and their potential. But we'll say around $90 million over the past 10 days in five O-linemen. And according to ESPN's Jeremy Fowler, he may not be done. So let me start with getting the Teller reaction here. How significant is this signing for a Texans franchise who some would say have been just short of negligent in addressing the O-line?
Well, I think credit for pursuit of a plan and execution in terms of moves made under that plan. We have to wait to see about the efficacy of the plan, because I will go back 1 year in time where Nick Caserio repeatedly, and some would say aggressively, addressed the offensive line. It's just the majority of the moves, Laken Tomlinson, Cam Robinson, okay, Ed Ingram, worked out. Wyatt Teller, nice pedigree, but there is a dot, dot, dot. You're not getting a guy in his prime. You're getting a guy who's 31 years old, three consecutive Pro Bowl seasons, 21, 22, 23. All the metrics indicate that he's dropped off fairly notably to below average guard play, in fact, in 2025. However, if you're below average, that's better than crummy. So if in the aggregate, Caserio this time around has placed enough bets, Teller absolutely in this phase is the signature. A few days ago, Evan Brown, who started every game for the Arizona Cardinals. Now, the Texans not exactly rating studly offensive lines in the Browns and the Cardinals. Nevertheless, NFL starters. In Brown's case, he should be a depth guy. You're certainly signing Teller to start opposite Ingram at guard. And I think this solidifies the concept that Braden Smith and Trent Brown are a job share at right tackle. If Braden Smith's moving in at guard, it's because something else has gone wrong at guard. But, you know, you place enough bets on the wheel, you hope to have a decent hit rate.
Yeah, I think Braden Smith there is your right tackle. You have Trent Brown also, just in case, in case of emergency. So great plan there. I like what they did, because you essentially, Titus Howard now is getting like $22.5 million a year. So you look at the Braden Smith deal, he can get around $25 million if everything breaks right. So that's 12 and change a year for him. And then you look at the Wyatt Teller signing there, 16 guaranteed. I think it's worth up to about 23 if everything pans out. So once again, about 11, 12 million. So you've essentially plugged two holes with the salary of one guy. And now Titus Howard was a guy that could play tackle and guard, and you could argue some of these guys can too. But I'd rather have two players because you had two big holes there. I like this in theory. I think it should work out great. I'm with Charlie. We'll have to see how it plays out on the field, but it tells me they have a plan. And Teller's a great run blocker. Like, this guy, he's a mauler. He likes to do that. Braden Smith is too. So in the signing of Foster Moreau at tight end, he's not a guy you're expecting to catch a ton of passes. He's a good run blocking tight end. So there's clearly a plan. And D'Amico said it at the end of the season, we have to get better on the O-line to run the ball. We have to get more of our running backs. And that's what they're doing. And that's why, to Brandon's point at the beginning of the video, Nick Caserio was kind of laughing off the need to upgrade the O-line and say, oh, I'm not sure what film you guys were watching, but we got better. Yeah, you got better, but it wasn't good enough. And he still missed with the Laken Tomlinson signing and Cam Robinson at 1 year, $12 million. He didn't even make it the whole season, still having to pay money for him. So plenty of mistakes there too. But overall, I love this, whether it's D'Amico, Nick Caserio. Personally, I think this is more D'Amico making this like, hey, Nick, we need to go get this, this, and this. Now, you can tell me who the best options are and the scouting staff can get together, but I think it's D'Amico that lit a fire under his ass. Like, we got to fix this this offseason. Look at how many guys they've replaced. It's basically Ariante Ursary. We'll see if Jake Andrews sticks around as a starter. And of course, Ingram, they brought back and paid him more money on a three-year deal. But so it's a three-year deal for him. Teller, it's a two-year deal. Smith, it's a two-year deal. That's kind of a Caserio special. He likes these shorter deals. So I think that means they could still attack the offensive line in the draft. So I think that should definitely be the plan. That's where you can get some value there. So for me, I love the move. I like that they're taking it seriously. There's a plan. They know they have to get better in this area, and they're putting their money where their mouth is.
A sports executive speaking with a forked tongue? Nick Caserio proved that out. What, me worry? What, anyone else worry about the state of the offense or the offensive line? And he's doing a turnover job. Right. This is more ripping out drywall than just spackle with what they're trying to do. The encouraging element with the Teller and Smith signings, they are pedigreed really good players, way above what Tomlinson had ever done, what Cam Robinson had ever done. Ingram had an all right season, but certainly Smith and Teller more accomplished than Ingram has ever been. You just hope you're not buying the downside of the curve. It's okay if their best football is behind them because their best football was really good. You know, about six Pro Bowls between the two of them. You just hope that it's closer to the peak of the curve than the bottom of the valley.
Yeah, and I'd like to point out, too, a lot of people are poo-pooing this because of the age. Teller's 31. Just keep in mind, everybody's not really paying attention. Tytus Howard turns 30 in May. 31 and 30, not a huge difference, and you're paying Tytus Howard twice as much money.
Yeah, the one element we do need to keep factoring in the Texans' bookkeeping is they ate $23 million to get out of Tytus Howard. That. The four and a half or so that they saved contributed to the fund that enabled them to bring in Smith and Teller and behind those two guys, Brown.
They eat money with all these guys, Charlie, Shaq Mason, Cam Robinson. That's
yeah. There's another
that's
sign.
Style. That can work out.
We're going to continue this conversation. I want to get into it more, but let's get a word in from our sponsor, Alvin Equipment.
All right, we're going to go birth dates again, or birth year. 1952, Vladimir Putin. Boo. Liam Neeson. There's a real tough guy. And Bob Costas. Not so tough, but a great career. 1952, also the year that Alvin Equipment opened its doors. The oldest Kubota dealer on the Texas Gulf Coast. If you need Kubota products, tractors, zero-turn mowers, compact track loaders, excavators, Alvin Equipment has everything Kubota in stock and with low-rate financing available. They're just off Highway 6. You can call 281-331-3177. Online, find them at their name, alvinequipment.com, and let them know you heard that name on Texans on Tap.
Yeah, I just want to go back and touch on the Nick Caserio comment. Josh, you brought it up again. Are we watching the same film? Apparently we were.
Yeah.
Because you don't need to do an overhaul of your offensive line and spend $90 million in 10 days for something that was just fine. Look, I get it. I work in corporate America, so there's corporate speak. Sometimes you got to toe a company line, but at least he addressed it. I think that's really, you know, as we were jumping on here, that was the main thing is, I feel a renewed sense of enthusiasm for 2026 because these things are getting addressed. And, you know, I agree with you completely, Charlie. We have to see this play out. But I don't know. Do you guys share my optimism for the upcoming season? Like this, it feels a little different now.
I think the Texans have reclaimed favorite status in the AFC South. Now we do have a draft to go through. But last week we talked about the Jaguars with a couple of prominent losses. Indianapolis Colts, the same, along with 2 years, $88 million for Daniel Jones at quarterback. And the Titans still don't have a viable NFL roster. So the Texans have absolutely fortified the offensive line. They've upgraded at feature running back. Two second-year wide receivers, along with Nico Collins. Dalton Schultz off a career or career-equaling quality season as a pass-catching tight end. So what does that leave to be wary about on offense? If the O-line is right and the wide receiver and tight end combination, nice element of pass catchers, and the running game is upgraded, what does that leave? What does that leave?
We know what that leaves. And at least CJ, he has a better chance if you have a running game. I bring it up every chance I get. Woody Marks, 0 100-yard rushing games in the regular season. He finally got one in the Steelers game in a blowout. And how many times they get down on the 1 yard line and you feel like, man, if they were on the 7 yard line, I'd feel better about him maybe scoring here. In the tush push stuff with Cade Stover, now you can hand the ball to David Montgomery and he should be able to get you a yard or two with these great run blockers. So D'Amico nailed it. And remember all season he talked about, oh, what's the identity? He's like, oh, we're a physical run first team that plays good defense. And we're like, D'Amico, look in the mirror. You may aspire to be that. But that hasn't been the case all season. So you asked, excited, Brandon? Yes, Brandon. I've never been this excited about the offensive line in the past at least handful of years. I mean, they are really trying to do an overhaul here, and we'll see if it works out. But I said this earlier on my show, all you can do is just think to yourself, like, what's the most likely outcome to happen? And then go do that and then hope the cards fall your way. That's all you can really control. You never know with injuries or guys fall off or all kinds of stuff can happen. You just have to go what's most likely to happen. And what's most likely to happen is the guys they brought in to play on the offensive line should be better than the guys that they're replacing.
And a first significant trickle-down effect, well, maybe not first, but an upcoming trickle-down effect of this, the hackneyed phrase when draft time arrives, best player available, no matter what, true to your board, best player available. That is falderall. You have to have some flexibility or teams lie about their board because, say, running back happens to be the best player, true grade on the Texans board. They're not taking a running back or a wide receiver with their first round choice, but they're no longer virtually obligated to go offensive line. Now, all things being equal, offensive line is my co-leader on the course because they did sign older guys, right? Ursary's the only young offensive lineman they have to grow with as you look beyond the immediate time horizon. But now, if there's some bulky load of a D-tackle that they want to boost the interior depth after the free agent losses, right? Rankin's back and Togi is still here, but they did take some hits with a couple of guys settle, most notably perhaps moving on. But they're not almost forced to go offensive line with at least one of those first two high picks, 28 in the first round, then the 10th pick of the second round. Though I'd say it's still strongly recommended.
So Charlie mentioned how he kind of hinted at the potential places that might need upgrading here, Josh. He talked also about the impact this could have on the draft. What do you agree that this opens up the board for Houston's draft, where maybe this gives Casario to do one of his famed trade backs? But also, what do you see as some of the pressing needs on this team now after the smoke settled with the free agent moves here?
It hasn't changed too much for me. It's just now it's not a desperation move. I want it to be offense. I don't want the first pick or two on the defense. I'm not going to be upset or mad at it, but the offense has so far to go. So if a great offensive player falls to you that you didn't think was going to land there, you can just snag him. And we've noticed, I've talked about this a few times, they didn't go out and replace Diggs or Christian Kirk so far this offseason. They're relying on some in-house guys. Xavier Hutchinson's still there. And of course you have Nico and Higgins and Jalen Knoll. They're still on the squad, but they didn't go out in free agency or try and trade for somebody this year. They could still do that, but I don't think it's likely to happen. So I think they're going to rely on developing these receivers. And if a great running back, even I know this isn't a great draft, but in theory, if a really nice running back were to fall to you, that could be something that's interesting too, because David Montgomery, he's going to be 29 years old. And we didn't talk about this. They reworked his deal. So I will give Nick Casario some credit here in that rework of the contract. According to Aaron Wilson, He has like a $500,000 roster bonus for each game he's active. So he can make up to like $8.5 million if he just suits up, which I'd rather see that than what happened with Joe Mixon, where the guy just falls off the face of the earth for a season and you have to wait till after the year to cut him. Let's get these guys some a nice signing bonus early and then let's pay them for actually helping out. But to answer your question, Brandon, I want it to be offense. I'd prefer offensive line, but what if there's a great tight end there? They need that too. They need playmakers, and that's something this offense just they don't have enough of. When Nico Collins goes down, there's not a lot left, and you're also counting on Tank Dell returning to form, and we just don't know if that's a reality at this point.
And that's why I would add if there's a burner wide receiver, not a fast guy who plays football, but a fast football player, on the board at 28, I wouldn't go, what are you doing? If they went that way in the first round, I'm still not going to preclude that defensive lineman if with a narrow view of best player available. Yeah, best player available, provided he's a wide receiver, an offensive lineman. You know, one of those special tight ends generally don't make it past the middle of the first round these days, Colton Loveland. Last year, Tyler Warren last year both went in the top 15. But, you know, if the best player on their board via grade is a safety, Nick Caserio is going to lie about what their board was because they're not taking a safety in the first round with the starting five defensive backs that they have at this point. You know, linebacker, Al Shire is going into the last year of his you address that in the mid-rounds if you're looking for a possible successor there. It's not like it's 2026 Super Bowl or bust, but it's the last year C.J. Stroud is truly cheap under at least the NFL salary cap. So bolstering that offense even more, priority one, I'm good with a defensive tackle.
Yeah, and Danielle Hunter getting a little long in the tooth. I know they just gave him a boatload of more money, but if you were able to find his replacement in a couple of years late in the first round, much less expensive option because you're about to have to pay Will Anderson all the money, that could make some sense too.
You know, besides increasing my anticipation for the season, which I've already talked about, I'm also much more intrigued about the draft because it is so wide open, because this does give Nick Caserio a ton of flexibility to really approach this from any number of ways. And I also think, too, a very interesting part of next season is going to be, Charlie mentioned, you mentioned Stroud and this being the last cheap year that they'll have him. I think if you give him a solid line and a good run game, I think you're going to learn a lot about C.J. Stroud next year. If you take the excuses away, and I'm not saying he hasn't performed because of those things, but if you take the excuses away and the rationalization from all of us as pundits who watch the games, and you have to judge him on, you've got time to operate, what are you doing with it? And you've got a real share of offense because you have a ground game. Now, granted, we don't know that's going to play out that way. We still have to see how this executes on the field. But should it play out that way, I think it's really exciting from a standpoint of we could see a progression of C.J. Stroud back to something that looks more like his rookie year. Or we could determine that maybe it wasn't the pass pro that was the boogeyman for him. Maybe he is just not who we thought he may have been. But I hope it's obviously the former more than the latter. You hope that you do have your franchise quarterback and you hope that he blossoms from this.
C.J. Stroud was more mid than he was knocking on the door of elite. And he's just not as talented as Josh Allen or Joe Burrow. I hate the NFL or football phrasing arm talent. I don't think C.J. Stroud has Justin Herbert's arm talent. But come the end of the 2026 season, I want there to at least be some debate. Hey, who would you rather have going forward, Justin Herbert or C.J. Stroud? Because off last season, the pendulum has totally moved to Justin Herbert relative to C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud's in the second cut of quarterbacks at best. He needs to work his way up that list with a better, quote-unquote, supporting cast.
Yeah, he needs that play action. In that game, I know he was so bad against the Patriots, but you don't have Dalton Schultz and you don't have Nico Collins and your run game gives you absolutely nothing. Turning the football over doesn't help, but he didn't have the tools to get the job done, obviously. And let's be real, this offense is bottom third of the league, and I think I'm being kind. how many of those points were just Fairbairn going out there and kicking a million field goals? Like, they got to find a way to score more touchdowns this year. And hopefully that's by running some in with David Montgomery. They settled way too often for field goals, and that'll get you beat at some point or another.
And they'll say, hey, we were better than bottom third in scoring. Yeah, well, you scored 44 points against the Ravens when they were completely helpless with seven starters out earlier in the year. And then they larded, was it 40 or close to it, against trash Arizona late in the year. As we try to consistently make the point during the season, NFL stats, when you're only playing 17 games, they can be warped and bent by a couple of games that skew the numbers. The Texans did not have a good offense in 2025.
And I don't need CJ to have the biggest arm. I know he's not a running threat, so I don't expect that from him. It would be nice, but I know that's not a part of his arsenal. But the word game manager has become a pejorative, but it's not. If he's a very good, effective game manager, I'll take it. If he's as accurate as he was in his rookie season, I'll take it. Be a net positive for the team. Charlie, as we're talking,
Jared Goff.
Yeah.
David Montgomery's former teammate. Can he do what Jared Goff does? You know, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, I agree. Charlie, as we're talking about adding playmakers onto this team, give us a word for Alvin Equipment, who can add playmaking equipment to your company.
Alvin Equipment, family owned for three generations, dating to 1952, featuring Kubota products. Alvin Equipment is the oldest Kubota dealer on the Texas Gulf Coast. Tractors and track loaders, zero-turn mowers and excavators, all in stock, all with low-rate interest financing available. Also, full service and parts departments. They're just off Highway 6. You can call if you'd like, 281-331-3177. They're online at alvinequipment.com. Mention you heard about them on Texans on Tap.
All right, so this last topic's not Texans related, but certainly Houston related. On past episodes, we've touched on possibly the biggest culture thieving franchise in the NFL, the Tennessee Titans, and their tendency to dip into the nostalgia pool. But a few days ago, they graduated from petty theft by throwback jersey to grand larceny via redesigning their unis and logo to completely lean into the Houston Oilers branding. The Adams family, who we'll assume is unironically named that, they own the rights to the branding, so it's, you know, it's fine. They are still named the Tennessee Titans, but watching the feedback online, I'm sure we'll have some in our comment section, which we encourage, but I wanted to take a poll of the panel. What are your thoughts on the Titans redesign? Oiler inspired jerseys, game or lame?
I won't flat out say lame, but to me, it's a big misdirect. Amy Adams Strunk rhymes with junk. Her football team is garbage, AKA junk. The clothes don't make the man, so they can do whatever the hell they want with their uniforms. Their football team blows. They have a brand new stadium coming online in 2027. Maybe they're the best dressed team in the stadium. Until the team is any good, I don't care what the hell they're wearing.
Yeah, they chased their head coach out of town so he could go take the Patriots to the Super Bowl. Great move, guys. Really, really nice job. So I think the uniforms look good because they're basically just ripping off the Oilers uniforms. I liked them a lot better when they were the Oilers uniforms. But go create your own deal. I think it's lame what they're doing. Create your own history. You move to another city. You change the name of the team. Lean into that, not into old Oilers nostalgia.
On the one hand, I think if they wanted to be the Oilers, they didn't have to change their name. They were clearly distancing themselves from the brand. And there are plenty of other examples of teams that when they move away, rescind their claim to the previous city branding. Tennessee did not do that. On the other hand, you know, obviously legally it's theirs. And I think just as importantly, Bob McNair wanted the Texans to have their own identity and forge a new path in Houston, which I think that's important too. So yes, there is nostalgia attached to it, but there's also a ton of heartbreak and failure that were folded into those Oiler uniforms. And if I'm being honest, the Titans redesign looks cool. So in conclusion, I have to say, in all fairness, it's freaking lame you litigious culture thieves. Enjoy your new unis in last place. One last reminder, if you enjoy watching our Texans coverage, hit like on the video and subscribe to the channel. And if you listen on podcasts, give us a 5-star rating while you're here. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. And as always, go Texans.